parsha is Amor Tafshin Ayin Dalet. We're going to go into one of the psukim at the beginning of the parsha. It says regarding when it goes into the kohanim and what they're allowed to do regarding tumah, who they're allowed to be metame for. There are seven relatives that are mentioned. Six of them are direct. One of them is indirect. Right, that a kohen is allowed to be metame for his father, mother, son, daughter, brother, besula, sister, and then we add on a wife that's hinted to in the pasuk itself. The pasuk says in pasuk Hey, lo yikruhu korcha baroshon pasukanam lo yigalehu vipsarom lo yisur tu sarates. We're going to skip the middle part of this pasuk, which deals with payas, the fact that they can't cut their payas. That's a story for another time. We're going to concentrate on the fact that they are not allowed to let themselves go bald. They cannot make themselves bald, nor can they make scratches in their skin. So the first thing we got to know is that in Gemara Makos Daf Chaf, it's quoted by Rashi. This is not just referring to any time that the Kohanim want to make themselves bald or scratching their skin. It deals with a dead person. When somebody dies, they're not allowed to make scratches or make themselves bald over the person that passed away. Halakhically, yeah. Yeah, it's a problem. But I will tell you, we won't talk specifically about you or the fact that you have a one where you should be having your payas. That won't be our discussion for right now. But the funny thing about this pasuk is that in Devarim Perek Yud Dalid, we already see this issur, or I should say we will see this issur regarding regular Yisraelim. This is not relegated only to Kohanim and specifically for them. This law is not only for the Yisraelim, but also for the Kohanim. In other words, it's given over to everybody, but it seems like we're specifically concentrating on the Kohanim. And the question is why? What happens with the Kohanim over here that they get this law along with everybody else? Now, well, let's go into this law altogether. What was the pshat behind this? So people felt, and I guess still people feel this way, although they don't do it in the same way, that a way for them to recognize that somebody had died is to make an everlasting impression. An impression that would stay there for long or stay there for life. One of the things they did was pass, you know, they shaved off their entire head. Meaning they made it something they put on top of their head in order to show that they were completely gone. Another thing that they did was they made scratches. Now, cutting is something that's, you know, found more recent, unfortunately, for bad things. People have to do cutting to, you know, to release tension and for depression issues and things like that. And it's a terrible thing to do. But nonetheless, there seems to be something behind it that when people do cut, they feel like there's a release of something. It's a terrible thing to do and not something that anybody should do. But apparently, that's what they did back then. This was their process of mourning. And they were able to get over the dead, seemingly, by doing these processes. And the Torah tells us that we can't do it. Neither Yisrael nor a Kohen can do this. Now, the Sforno explains the reason why it's put over here is because although we're allowing Kohanim to do certain things regarding Kvura, they were allowed to go to the funeral homes when it came to certain things. There were certain things we allowed. There are other things that we don't allow. Meaning this we allowed. But we don't allow excessive mourning. When it goes to the point where they're doing something that's extreme, to the point where it's beyond what people normally do, in that case, you cannot do such things. This is too much to cut yourself or to make yourself bald. But Hirsch said, this is not just an expression of pain. That's how Hirsch puts it. Rather, it's a permanent sign of man's loss. That I have no value, that I'm worth nothing, that I have nothing in this world. That's the concept. It shows how little worth a person has and what it is. And we're going to speak about this as we get to the end. It's going to show us something toward the end, but this is something of what we are. Now, everyone asks why this law is written over here by the Kohanim as well as the Yisraelim, and there's a Havamin over here. If you look at the Kliyakar on your sheet, you'll see an answer for it. The Chassam Sofer has another answer. I'm not going to speak about that right now, but the Kliyakar answers it. The Chassam Sofer answers it. There are answers as to why we need it in both places and why we have both. But let's get into the real stuff over here. What I mean by that is the quasi-Kabbalah stuff that Lo Yikruhu Korcha stands for. Something that gets into a little bit more esoteric Torah that we don't fully understand, but we can get a little bit of it. The Reb Yonatan Eibschitz, who was well known for being that type of person, was just on the edge. He was into amulets and making things like that, and it's one of the reasons how he got in trouble. Reb Yonatan Eibschitz speaks about this matter at length, and he goes into it. And I gave a little bit of an introduction here in order to understand what Reb Yonatan is talking about. Number one, Esav was born with hair all over his body. Not just hair. My babies were all born with hair, but they were born with like that little black hair, like baby fuzz, that eventually falls off, and then they got their regular hair later on. It all falls out, and they got something else. Babies are born with hair that's definitely true. Esav was not born like a normal human being. He was born fully haired, meaning hair all over his head, a full beard and mustache, not just a little sphere of beard, we're talking full-blown beard and mustache, and hair all over his body. That's how he was born. He looked like he was fully made, almost with like a suit full of red hair all over his body, ready to go in the world. That's how Esav was born. Now, it's not just Stam that he was born that way. Well, Yaakov Avinu was born completely smooth and unhairy. It's not just Stam that happened. Esav lived in the land of Seir. He married the daughter of the man who was king of Seir, who was known as Seir. The word Seir means hair, but it's so much more than that. Seir is the gematria of 580. The Malach of Esav is the Malach that's known as the Satan. His angelic name is Sam, Samach Men. Sam has a female counterpart. We don't know exactly what that is, but he has a female counterpart, a demoness woman, who's known as Lily. And I'm not going to say the full name. The last letter of the name is Saf. There are reasons not to say her name or to say Sam's name in full. But that's it. There's Sam, and then there's Lily. Putting those two together, Seir is 580, Sam is 100, Lily with the Saf at the end is 480. So we got 580 altogether. You have 480 and 100 is 580, which means that Seir, that name that's used for Esav, is a connection with the Satan and his female counterpart. So therefore, there's a connection between the two over here. This isn't just Stam. This isn't just like a coincidence where we're saying like, oh, this happens to be. This is exactly who Esav was. This is what Esav stood for, and that's the concept that we're trying to learn over here. Now, they have a connection. That connection is that the hair of a person, therefore, is connected to Kokol Satan. Tuma, to the point where when a person has hair and Tuma wants to grab onto something, they can grab onto a person's hair. Now, let's give another example. You get up in the morning, the first thing you do is you wash your hands. Why? Because when you're asleep, you're dead. It says, if you're dead, Kokol Satuma are thus upon you, the same way that Tuma goes upon dead people. That's the same thing when it comes to a person when he's sleeping. When you wake up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is able to push out all that Tuma, but it remains in the extremities of the body. Extremities of the body means on the hands, and it used to be on the toes. We no longer wash our feet, but nonetheless, the hands of the body are called those extremities, and we wash our hands to get rid of that Tuma, to get rid of the last vestiges of Tuma that are on us from when we were sleeping. I'm sorry? I don't know. That I don't know. I don't know when that happened. Probably based on Rosh Hashanah Zalman Orbach, that the powers of Tumah have been weakened. You'd assume that it's based on that. But the hair has another concept. There's another connection there. And this is what we're going to learn over here. A mitzora, when a person has tzaraas and becomes tahor, the first thing he does when he becomes tahor is he shaves off the hair of his body. That's the first thing he does. A levi, when there's somebody from Shevet Levi, a regular person from Shevet Levi, when a Shevet Levi, a person wants to serve in the Mishkan, the first thing he does is he shaves all the hair all over his body, and that's when he went in. Remember, that was the reason why Korach got so upset. His wife said to him, you look crazy without all your hair. What happened to you? He said, Moshe Rabbeinu decided to shave off all the hair, to which Korach's wife said, he was fooling you. He's just making fun of you. And that was the whole discussion. Korach said, but Moshe did it also. She said, Tomus Nafshi and Mephilishim. It's a whole big discussion between them, but that's what made Korach go off. Korach is known as being bald because of what happened to him when he first started serving in the Mishkan, because they got rid of all of his hair. Now, there's a concept behind all that. They got rid of all their hair as well. Now, so too kings and Kohanim Gedolim. Kings shave off their hair. Kings are required to get a haircut every single day. Kohanim Gedolim are required to get a haircut every single week. Kohanim are required within a month. It's good. Well, they didn't have Sphira, right? But they would have had it. Kohanim got a haircut every single month. He was supposed to get it every single month. You couldn't go more than 30 days. They couldn't let their hair grow so long. So what's the pshat behind this? The pshat behind it is, if the hair is where Tuma resides, or where Tuma grabs onto, then it's better for a person to get a haircut, right, to be able to get rid of all of his hair, so you don't have anything. However, there is an advantage to having hair. There is an advantage. The advantage is the following. The hair of one's body is still tufel. It's secondary to your skin, which means that although the tuma grabs onto the hair, it's better that the tuma grabs onto the hair than on the actual skin or the person himself.
Nazir.
I'm sorry? We'll talk about a Nazir. But that's the concept of what it is. Meaning, if tumah grabs onto your head, it's very difficult to get rid of that tumah. If tumah grabs onto the hair, then it's very easy to get rid of that tumah. You just shave it off and it's all gone. That's the concept of what it would be and why it's better sometimes to have a little bit of hair. Now, when a person passes away, his kadosh neshama leaves his body, which allows for tumah to come in. Tumah comes in when kedusha leaves. Call it like taking out the garbage. You take out the garbage and the flies start coming, or the squirrels or the raccoons, depending on where you live. That's when they all come in. When a person passes away, then there's tumah that's able to now come in, that the kedusha was able to knock out. Now the tumah is able to come in. When a person dies, not only does that person pass away, but anybody who's connected with that person, a relative or a good friend or something like that, somebody who's involved with the mace, a little bit of him died as well. He has a little bit of a loss, of a little spark of his neshama when somebody else passes away, which is why you feel so sad, so upset. You lost a little bit of something, which means since you lost a little bit of kedusha, there's an ability for tumah to come in and grab onto you. There's a time where they can come in and they could have something to do with you. Now that means that if you're around the person who passed away or around a relative of someone who passed away, tumah can be grabbed. There could be a koach, some force of evil that is the ability to grab onto that person. And what does that do to a person? It makes you lower functioning. It doesn't allow you to think clearly. It doesn't allow you to make the right decisions. You end up choosing the wrong things because you're involved with tumah. It's almost like a teenager who doesn't have that part of his brain. He just can't make the right decision. It's the same thing over here. There's no ability for him to make the right decisions because he just doesn't have it. The tumah is convincing him where to go. It also leaves him in a depressed, sad state. We know what happens when a person is depressed. He destroys his entire life, everything about him. That's what depression does to a person. He no longer has what he wants. He can't do anything. He just can't do anything. This is what tumah does when a person is grabbed down by tumah. Now, the other nations of the world knew these concepts. I don't know if they still do. They have these concepts anymore. But these concepts were well known by them. So when somebody passed away in their family, they made laws that they would purposely shave their heads at that moment. So that at that moment, when somebody passes away and tumah comes in, the tumah would grab on not to their hair, which could be released, but onto their actual bodies, and that the tumah would be connected to them, so that they'd be able to use that tumah for their purposes, to be Doresh Elamesim, to speak to the dead, to be Kosim Kisamim, to deal with magics and things like that. That's what they wanted. They didn't want hair, which would be a disconnect between them and the tumah. They wanted to remain connected. They wanted to have that connection between them. And therefore they purposely left, took off all their hair, made themselves bald for this very reason. And for this, we tell people to do the exact opposite. An avil cannot cut his hair. So that the tumah that's there, when a person passes away, that tumah that's around will only grab onto his hair. And then after 30 days, when he's able to get a haircut, then when he shaves off his head or takes care of the hair on his head, the tumah will be gone. The tumah remains during Shiva, it remains during Avelos, and is connected to the hair of that person, but then it's gone afterward. That's the concept of what we have in Avelos. Yeah.
It seems like you don't have to necessarily shave all your hair. It seems like the tumah actually
sticks. This sticks on the outside, exactly. So because just like the fingertips.
I wouldn't expect all the kings to be bald.
No, they weren't like that. You know, the greatest haircut, the one that's described in the Gemara, and I'm forgetting where I'm believing. It's Moed Katan in the first part, but I can't remember what daf it's on. Right, it mentions that the best haircut to get was the haircut in which one hair could not even touch the other. I mean, it was a very short haircut where the hairs were long enough to be able to go near the next hair, but they didn't touch the next hair. I don't know how short that is, but yeah, you'd say like a two. That's probably what it would refer to, something like that. But it's a very short haircut, but not complete. The kings got that every day. I don't know if it, in the front, they probably had some hair in the front, but I don't know what they had exactly, but they for sure had, there was something like that. Now, This law is therefore repeated by the Kohanim. And here's the reason why. Kohanim were extremely holy people that dealt with the Mishkan and the Beis HaMikdash all day long. That's what they did. That's where they were. It would seem that Tumah would have no effect on them. They wouldn't be able to be affected by Tumah. They were around Kedusha all the time. So therefore, if somebody passed away, they would be fine with cutting off their hair. They would be fine with making these bald spots on their head because Tumah won't grab onto them. They're too Kadosh. They have no ability to be affected by Tumah. To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, no, this Tumah is so great, it can affect even the holy Kohanim. Even they can be affected by this. The only time we allow shaving to be done, the only time we allow you to get rid of your hair, is when you're in a state of Tahara and Kedusha. A Mitzora, when he becomes Tahor. A Levi, when he goes in to the Beis HaMikdash and he's starting to work in the Mishkan of the Beis HaMikdash. Somebody who's in a state of Kedusha like the Kohen Gadol or a Melech who has to deal with the Torah all day long, hopefully, if that the Melech does his act correctly. I'm sorry?
Why would the Mitzorah necessarily be Kadosh? She's just Tahor.
It's a good question. But once he brings his Korbanos and he's done Tshuva, so we're assuming that he now becomes a great person.
So if a person today does Tshuva and goes to the Mikvah, then he can change.
In theory. In theory, it would be the same type of concept. And that answers nothing.
There's no way to get out.
That's true. But that also answers Nazir that you brought up before. That's a Nazir. A Nazir is a person who feels like there's something wrong. He needs to be Mekadesh himself again. So for 30 days he lets his hair grow longer so that the Tumah attaches to his hair and not him. And when he's done with Nazirus, that's when he cuts it all off, gets rid of his Tumah, and he's now able to be Kadosh. Or the opposite. Because now he's Kadosh or Tahor, he's able to be holy. Now that person, like Shimshon, like a Nazir Shimshon or a Nazir Olam. Nazir Olam is a little bit different because a Nazir Olam does shave. But a Nazir Shimshon would be a person who is so Kadosh, who is so filled with Kiddush and Tahara, that there is no way for any bit of Tumah to attach itself to his hair at all. So in that state of constant Kiddush and Tahara that he's in, he can't get around with it. But now do you understand the concept why a Nazir who has long hair can't go near a cemetery? Can't go near a cemetery because that's where the residing place of Tumah is. If he goes near the cemetery, he's going to have that Tumah grab onto him. That's the concept. Now, again, we're dealing with things that are so far beyond our intellect, things that are just beyond, and I know I'm missing a lot over here. I'm only quoting you parts of Rav Yonah and Eifshitz with a little bit of Hakdama in order to understand it. But that's the concept of what this is. I'm sorry? I am telling you to always shave your hair. But that's the concept. That's what it is. And I feel that it is good to be able to talk about this during Sfirah specifically. Specifically. Now, I haven't spoken about the beard yet. I'll talk about that in a second. But there are other concepts going here. In another vein, in a different vein, very, very different from this, the Shach HaTorah brings a sefer called the Reikanti. The Reikanti was an early Rishon. He brings it down that a person's hair refers to Kochos Elokius, powers of HaKadosh Baruch Hu up above. Now, he says that by Adam HaElyon, the Adam, the original man, so to speak, but also the Adam that we are based off of, the real perfect human being, there's something that deals with his hair. Some of the hair of a person stands for chesed, that we would refer to the beard, and some of the hair stands for gevura, midas hadin, and that refers to the hair on top of the head. Those that come from chesed should not ever be destroyed, which is why we shouldn't be shaving, why we should all let our beards grow all the way long. The Bava Sali, he wasn't zocha to grow a beard until he was about 40. He had very wispy little hairs. Even after 40, he davened and davened and davened, and finally he was able to grow a beard. His beard was extremely, very, very wispy. So it was very thin in everything. Whenever he lost a hair of his beard, he would never pull his beard or anything, he would always touch it and he would kiss it sometimes. Whenever he lost a hair, he would save the hair because he felt that hair of the beard was so much chesed, so he saved it. He used to put it into his cloak. That cloak is now owned by Rav David Chaya Buchatzera, so the hair still exists that the Baba Sali had. I know it doesn't sound right, but it is. It's there. The Baba Sali used to look at pictures of the Ben Ish Chai and he used to say that is what a beard is supposed to look like. The Ben Ish Chai had a long, flowing, brown beard that looked like it was really soft. I've never touched it. He died in 1908, but it looked like it was a really soft, soft beard. He used to look at the picture and he used to kiss the beard in the picture when he saw the picture of the Ben Yishai. That's what the Baba Sali would do. The Baba Sali loved beards. Whenever he would see a person that had a long beard, he would go in and he'd stroke the beard of whoever came in. He would stroke the beard saying, "This is a beautiful beard. That's a beautiful beard." Unbelievable, the Baba Sali. Either way, regardless, Kohanim represent chesed. They they represent chesed. As we understand, Aaron brought chesed into the world. The Levium brought gevurah into the world. They're called mitzada gevurah. I don't want to go into the details. There's a famous Sheni Shmuel that deals with that issue. The difference between Kohanim and Levium, that Kohanim bring us up to Shemayim, while the Levium bring Shemayim down to us, so to speak. There's a difference between them and how it works regardless. Kohanim, because the Mitzad HaChesed, are told not to destroy their hair, not to cut their hair, and that's the sixth parsha. Levium, on the other hand, are told to take away all of their hair, because their hair, so to speak, is Mitzad HaDin, while the Kohanim's hair is Mitzad HaChesed. The Levium want to weaken it. That also explains, he says, woman. Women are Mitzad HaDin, he says. The Tzad of Nukva is called Tzad HaDin, which means that since they're Mitzad HaDin, they can cut off the hair from their bodies. They're allowed to, and they can shave parts of the head that a man can't. Like if they have a beard or payas, which is, I guess, okay by the payas part, they're allowed to shave those off, and there's no problem with it. Why? Because they're into Mitzad HaDin, which is like the Levium on the other hand. But the Kohanim are the opposite way. Kohanim are told, don't take off that hair. Don't do something like that. Now, that's the line that he gives. There was a Ben Ish Chai that I could not find inside, but I have in my notes from 2003, that says that when a person has bad thoughts, it causes his hair to grow quicker. So if a person ever tells you that his hair grows really quickly, you tell him to stop thinking those things. First thing you tell him, just stop. That's not the thing you should be. It maybe means that the hair grows wilder. I don't know what it means exactly. It could be that that represents taiva, going in all different directions. It says specifically in the Gemara in Erevin Daf Yud Ches that Chava, when she was created by a Kadosh Baruch Hu, a Kadosh Baruch Hu braided her hair, meaning held the hair in and didn't let it grow wild, rather braided it and kept it in. Seemingly that would represent keeping in, reining in the taivas. Reining in those taivas. Maybe that's what it refers to. There's a Gemara in Brachos Yud Aleph that mentions that there's a muscle. And the guy says, Zekein Chamegudel, your beard is very big. And the other person says, Yehei Kenegin HaMashchisim, my beard should be against the demons. That your beard can protect you from the Tzad HaTuma. So maybe it goes the other way. It's a very strange Gemara. Brachos Yud Aleph. It's clear, though, that there's so much more to this.
Is Tuma connected to the beard here? Or only
the
head hair?
It seems that it's only on the head hair.
But then why don't people have to shave their entire body?
So that's a good question. If they're all mitzad the din, the tzad of gevurah, maybe they have to get rid of all the gevurah that's on their body, and that includes, even by them, it's by their beard. I don't know, though. You know, we say, like in Sphira, you guys have, you know that extra little thing that you say at the end, it says, chesed shebe gevurah, and chesed shebe, you know, it could be that it's dealing with the chesed of gevurah, gevurah of chesed. I don't know exactly what that means, but probably it has to do with it's gevurah, but it's chesed, but it's connected with one another. So they got rid of it. I don't know what it means exactly, though. Also, listen, we know Korach is one of the grandsons of Esav. So clearly being bald was not a good thing. There was a grandson of Esav, the man of hair, who was entirely bald. So there's obviously something bad about being bald. Korach himself was obviously not a good person. I don't know why Korach's father ever named him after a grandson of Esav. That I don't know. But Korach himself, his name represents them. But on the other hand, Elisha Hanavi was called by the 42 young men who lost their jobs because Elisha sweetened the water. Those 42 young men called out to him and said, Alei Kereach, Alei Kereach, get out of here, baldy, get out of here, baldy. Rabbi Yoshua ben Korcha, the Gemara in Shabbos, Tosfos in Shabbos, and Daf Kuf Nun says that may have been Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was called Kereach, a bald person, by Ben Azai. Ben Azai said, I am the greatest person here. Everybody in comparison to me is like the shell of garlic. Chutz mina Kereach hazeh, except for this bald person referring to Rabbi Akiva. So clearly, there's some type of a connection. There's something that Korach has to do with. There's something there. There's even a Gemara about Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha that he got into a fight with a min. And the min said to him, this min, this apostate said to him, he said, how could you be so great? You're bald. That's what he said to him. Yeshua ben Korcha said, it's better to be bald than... Okay, it's a whole long whatever, Maisa. But there's something to this that we're missing, but there's always something over here. Let's speak about the scratches now. What are the scratches? The other nations, especially those who worship idols frequently, the Ovei Avodah Zarah, those who are known for worshiping idols, attempt to connect themselves to the dead to hear secrets from the other side. That way they know what's going on in all the different worlds. Soon their imagination runs wild. They have all these images in their head, and they can imagine things happening with just putting something inside their head. They can almost see the dead. They can see what the dead is trying to tell them. Some of these people, to keep the images clear and fresh in their minds, make tattooed images on their body of the dead people that have just passed away. They tattoo the image of the dead person, and then they stare at it, and they connect themselves to it, and they watch that person, so to speak back to them, and tell them secrets behind the grave. It may just be imaginary things. I'd imagine somewhat so. It could be that there was some reality to it, some type of tumor that worked this way, but that's what they would do. What's that? I would assume that there was something like that behind it. Those don't exist. But obviously there was something behind it. They created unbelievable tattoos that were there. This is what the Kohanim and Bnei Yisrael told. Don't get involved in this stuff. We have our own. The Kohanim, you have the Urim, the Tumim. You don't need these images. You don't need to make these scratches. You don't have to get involved in such types of things. The Havamina, again, is why would the Kohanim be different? You'd think that the Kohanim, who are involved with Torah all day long, they're sitting and learning Torah, and they're in the Avodah, they're doing Avodah in the Beis Mikdash all day long, they'll find it hard at sometimes. They'll find it hard to knock down their gaiva. Maybe they're always in a constant gaiva de kaseh because they're so great people. So maybe they need these tattoos to remind themselves of death. Scratch themselves to remind themselves that eventually they're going to die and they're not so great. That they're not such great people. Kamash Malan says at Kadosh Baruch Hu, no. That's even worse. They'll make themselves tamei by making these scratches and these tattoos. Don't get involved in such things. Now, I never saw this anywhere. I always thought that it connects back to Parshas Achramos, where it says that those who used to spill blood on the ground, they used to give korbanos to Shaitan, to Mazik, and to the demons by spilling out their blood. I always thought that that was the idea of the scratches as well. That you're standing by the mace, by somebody who passed away, and as you're standing there and the tumah is there, the Shaitan are there, you scratch your body and you connect to the demons in that way. That you're bringing in the demons and causing them to come near you. Maybe that's the reason why they tattooed themselves and bled themselves, but I haven't found it inside. Okay, it's hard to say such things without seeing inside. Now, I have a story over here from the Alain Lushaber. He quotes down, he says, the minhag of the monks of the other religions is to try to change their tzura completely. You can tell the difference between a regular Christian and a priest and a monk and a cardinal and the Pope. They have completely different modes of dress. They're just completely different. They all look different. Maybe you can't tell the difference between a priest and a regular guy. Maybe there's, you know, not as much. But they wear different clothing, and they specifically wear different clothing. That changes them. So the way that Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein says it is, they need that. Because in order to be easily recognized as a person who's different from everyone else, they need to change their outside appearance, possibly because there's no difference on the inside. That on the inside, they're just like any of the other people. That maybe that's the reason why they have to change for that reason. The command given to the Kohanim here is don't look different on the outside. In other words, change on the inside so that you can appear as being just a normal Jew. But you're on the inside. Everybody looks at you and they know, not from how you look, but rather how you act, that you're different from everybody else. And that's the command. Telling the Kohanim not to wear different clothing. Obviously, when you're doing the Avodah, you wear that clothing in the Beis HaMikdash. But when you're outside, you can look like other people. But act differently. It's not about the mode of dress. It's how you act on the inside. What do you like on the inside instead? What are you going to say, Jay?
Is this saying the Kohanim are not doing
the Avodah
when they're in their normal...
Yeah, in their normal fit, when they're with the other people. When they're in the Avodah, they're by themselves. When they're among other people, you shouldn't be able to tell the difference physically between the two, but you should see it within their actions, in the way they act, the way they are. Yeah.
Not talking about when they're wearing their big day because
we're
not in their
business. No, not the cloud. That wouldn't be that. And that's the idea. What they're told is, don't get involved in this stuff. Kiddoshim ye, we want you to be kadosh to a Kaddish Baruch Hu. We don't want you to do it. And that's the pasuk afterward. After saying, don't make yourself bald, don't put the scratch on your skin, to give you physical manifestation on your body that make you look different. No, kedoshim yiyu le'Elohim. Be holy to your God. That's the idea behind it, and act differently than everybody else. So, Rav Shlomo of Zvil, if anybody's been by the Mir Yeshiva, the building right to the left of the Mir Yeshiva is the Zvil building. Now, Rav Shlomo of Zvil was an unreal tzaddik. He passed away a while ago. His son just passed away not too long ago. I don't remember how many years. Now, his grandson is the Rebbe of Zvil over there. And there's also the Zvil, the big building where they have... Yeah, kind of a center yeshiva is there, and they have bris milas there and weddings and stuff like that. It's a big place. So either way, that's Zvil. So Rav Shlomo's Zvil looked like a normal person. I mean, he looked like Yerushalminik. That's what he looked like on the outside. He looked like a right, but you wouldn't be able to tell. But he was an unreal tzaddik. A person, they say that he would be in the mikveh almost all day long. And he would answer shilas when in the mikveh. The people would ask him shilas, and he would dip down, and then he would come up, and he'd answer the shilas. I mean, there's so much to say over Rosh Hashanah Zvil. The different stories that I've heard, there are unreal stories about Rosh Hashanah Zvil and what he was able to do, and what he was able to have. So either way, what happened was, this is the story that's brought down. A man worked as a builder in Haifa, and he was doing a job and whatever it was, and there were Arabs who were working at the same time. Now, this is at a time when it was still Palestine, meaning the British Parliament was still in charge, and their police force was in charge, and there was a big problem in hiring Jewish/Arab workers. Some people only hired Jews, some people hired Arabs. The Arabs were always upset at the Jews were always upset at the Arabs, and it led to a lot of tension, you know, between the workers. So there was one place where this Jewish worker was working, but all the other workers were Arabs, maybe a couple other Jews there. One of these Arab workers, a big guy, went up to the Jew and said, "Listen, don't come back to work tomorrow. If you come back to work, you're not going home." That's what he told him. The Jewish guy didn't know what to do. He needed a job. He had no other way of making money. He had a family at home, so he didn't know what to do. So he went to Rav Shlomo's Zvil. He traveled, I don't know, it doesn't say in the story, I don't know how he did this, but he traveled from Haifa to Yerushalayim seemingly that day, he traveled from Haifa to Yerushalayim. He went to Yerushalayim, visited Rav Shlomo's Zvil, and asked him what he should do. So Rav Shlomo's Zvil asked him a couple questions. Now, there was no questions of, do you have any weapons? No questions of, can you get like a metal thing and put it in your stomach? It's nothing like that. He asked him, are you Shomer Shabbos? Are you Koveya Itim L'Torah? Do you hold of Kashrus? And you hold of Taras Mishpacha. When the man answered in the affirmative that he kept all these laws, and he was very, very careful about that, the Rebbe told him, go back, you have nothing to worry about. Nothing to worry about. So the man went back, strengthened with the Rebbe's blessing, and went back to work the next day or 2 days later. I would assume it took him a day to travel to Yerushalayim and back. But he went back, and the Arab immediately approached him when he went back to work. The Arab went up to him and said, Did you think I was joking? Went up to him and punched him in the face. A couple seconds later, the Arab was dead on the ground. All the other people there, the Arabs that were around there, saw it. They couldn't understand. They called over the British Parliament. The British Parliament, you know, the policeman or whatever it was, policeman said they couldn't tell what he had died from. So maybe it was from a heart attack, but he didn't have any problems with his heart. So there was no problem before that. Regardless, the Jew remained at his job. He never had anything to worry about from that point on. This is Rav Shlomo Zvil. He gives a brachah there. I don't know why the guy had to be punched. That was my unfortunate part of the story. Maybe the guy did deserve like a little bit of a smack in the face. Maybe that's what he got. You know, it's unfortunate. The story should have been like he lifted up his arm and then he stopped. There is a famous story of the Rishash that way. The Rishash was told, don't go to the Kotel because the Arabs are going to do things. It's not the Rishash in the back of your Gemara. It's Rav Shlomo Sharabi, the Mekobel. So Rav Shlomo Sharabi, the Mekobel, was told, don't go to the Kotel. The Arabs are out for blood tonight. The Rav Shlomo Sharabi said, I'm going to the Kotel every night. I'm going to the Kotel tonight as well. Probably called it the Kotel, probably. I don't know. But he started going down, right? As he went down, oh no, he started. Yeah, so as he was going down toward that area, so an Arab did come out from behind from the dark, and he had a club in his hand, and he lifted up his club, and the Rishash turned to him, looked at him, and the man stopped where he was. Rishash went to the Kotel, came back, and that's that. The Arab guy, his wife, didn't know what happened to him that night, so she sent out a search party. Eventually they found him. He was standing in that alleyway, right outside the alleyway, with his club in his hand, and he couldn't move. He absolutely couldn't move. Right? There was nothing he could do. So they found out what happened, that he had tried to hit the Rishash, and that he was stuck in place, and he couldn't move his arm whatsoever, and that everything was in place just like that. And they went to the Rishash. The Rishash said to him, he tried beating me up. So until he promises never to touch a Jew ever again, his hand is not going to move. So the guy had to make the promise. I don't know how he promised when he couldn't move. I don't know how that works exactly, but he did it. And in the end, he was able to move and he was able to go down. There's stories like that. So I don't know why here you have to punch him in the face, but because he's not the Rishash. We're going to end up with this. Rishamshon Rav Hirsch has a huge piece on this, and this is a really good idea. Other religions tend to associate religion with death. They say that religion goes hand in hand with death. God's kingdom starts only when your life ends. There is no God here. God is only after our life is. God sends sicknesses, poverty, death into the world so that man will fear him, that we'll always be afraid, so that we'll always be afraid of God. Christian cemeteries, for that reason, are always right next to the churches. When people are crying and they're brokenhearted and they can't deal with things, that's when the priests are able to find fertile ground for the dissemination of their religion. That's what reverse says. It's the perfect time to be able to convince a guy, now you got to believe in God. This may be because the priests consider themselves men of death and not life. They deal with death all day long. They promise all the rewards after death. There's no rewards in this world by them, right? It's different. They use negative reinforcement in that way. And it's not to bash a religion per se. It really is true about any religion in the world where death plays such a prominent role in everything they do by us. It's not supposed to be this way. And that's the reason why the Kohanim are being warned. Our priests, our Kohanim are being warned. Stay as far away from death as possible. Don't have any shaykes to it. Don't go to a cemetery where you're not going to be maspid anyone. You're going to have no dealings with death at all. The only time you can is by your relatives, and if it's a Kohen Gadol, no one at all. Nothing. They shouldn't be involved in those methods. Our cemeteries should not be by our souls and by their places of worship. In fact, it should be the opposite. Our places of worship should be Kadosh Tahor places, and that's a place of tumah. They should stay far away in the field somewhere else. We're highly involved in the Kohanim, we're highly involved in Chesed, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, things that people do in life. They're supposed to be Kohanim of life, how to treat life and what to do during life. And that's the concept. Feeling for a person whose life is there, and that's that. We tell the Kohanim for that reason, stay far away from death. Your job should have nothing to do with it. They can't bear upon themselves the symbols of death. That's what we're telling them to do, and that's the concept of what we're talking about. So to Chazer very quickly, we went through this.
How's that, right? I mean, Yiddishkeit, this is just the corridor to the next world.
Olam Haba is
the next world.
In the Tanakh itself, in Tanakh, throughout all of Tanakh, there is not one mention of what happens after death. If you look us up in the Encyclopedia Britannica, 1999, which I have because it's in my parents' house, Jews don't believe in the afterlife. I didn't know, I had no idea. But that's that. It's only in Torah Shabbal Peh where there is that concentration. But there's a reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept it out of the Torah. Because it's not about what happens after that. That doesn't matter. Live life. That's the concept. Of course, this concept.
By the fathers or whatever.
There's no question. There's illusions. There's hints and everything. But there's no direct. And that's the reason why. The reason why it's not direct is because that's not what our life should be about. It should be about life. It's a concept. It's a concept over here. So again, we went through the Sforno first. We went through the Rabbi Yonis and Ipshitz about cutting off the hair of one's body and how that works. We went through the Shach and Din and Chesed. We spoke about the scratches of how they do certain things and what those mean. Tattoos and whatever it is for their tumor. Spoke about that story with Rav Shvil, that our idea is not to change our outside but to change our inside, and Rav Hirsch's idea of the difference between our religion and their religion and the concept behind it. We'll stop it, guys. Have a great Shabbos. Okay.